coming up on Red and Gold.
Go.
We feature Chiefs cornerback Brandon Flowers. Plus, I sit down with offensive coordinator Doug Peterson.
I think for us as a coaching staff and for me as a coordinator, the fact that we've really installed our entire offense last year, we don't have to go in and teach concepts anymore. Now we can really detail our work and we can teach fundamentals and techniques and dive into the offense.
Then we catch up with Chiefs Hall of Famer Gary Barbaro.
He was physically tough. He was mentally tough.
If you were coming on his side or across the middle, look for Gary Barbaro because he was going to stick you.
It's all next on this edition of Red and Gold.
Across the 40, Charles is going to go. See you later.
Hey, Chiefs fans, welcome to Red and Gold. I'm your host, Rachel Sanchi. Drafted in the second round in 2008, cornerback Brandon Flowers has become a mainstay on the Chiefs' defense. And this year, he earned his first ever trip to the Pro Bowl. This week, number 24 is the focus of our player spotlight.
Corner is one of the most important positions because of how good the quarterbacks are. It becomes a chess match with the quarterbacks. In the AFC West, it's doubly important that Brandon Flowers has an excellent year.
They've got the ability to pick a defense apart, and the receiver position just gets more and more athletic every day. I mean, you're talking about guys that are combination football and basketball players. So if you're a corner, you've got to be a chameleon. You've got to be able to jam at the line against some guys. You've got to be able to run with the speed guys, and it's what makes it so important in the NFL.
Every single week, he's got to go up against the number one, and Brandon does a good job each and every week. Brandon has the athletic ability and the skill set. He can play whatever you put him in.
It's one of the best qualities that a corner can have. Being versatile as a player, and what Brandon Flowers brought to the table was an ability to play inside, be able to be on a smaller receiver, but also go out and cover some of those bigger bodies.
Everybody in that D backfield has got to be able to match up one-on-one with some of the best athletes in the world so that Bob Sutton has the ability to use the other players to create that extra pressure to really disrupt the timing of the quarterback.
Gabbert to throw in the pocket, fires a pass, left side intercepted, Brandon Flowers at the 40. Brandon Flowers is playing great football.
He knows how to read quarterbacks very well, and he knows when to jump routes. And if it doesn't always result in an interception, it results in affecting the play, cutting a guy off, and forcing a quarterback to go someplace else.
The challenge for a guy like Brandon Flowers is going to be that he's not the biggest. That's probably what kept him out of the first round initially. But you do have the ability to play bigger than your height. You know, it's not just about walking out there and being measured.
What reminds me of Brandon is some of the old school guys, Albert Lewis, James Hasty, Dale Carter. Brandon wants to compete on every play, and he doesn't want to be beat on any play. He wants to dominate on every single aspect that he has to.
I think back to the game at Denver when he was matched up with Wes Welker. Things got a little bit chippy.
Welker, and he gets smashed, taken down by Brandon Flowers.
So he was trying to intimidate Wes Welker and get him off his game, get him off his routes. I thought he sent a message and played with the type of attitude and chip on his shoulder that the rest of the corners need to play with if the Chiefs are going to be successful.
So he's going to have that attitude. He's going to have that physicality. And Brandon is going to give you everything that he has.
I think the thing that Brandon Flowers uses to his advantage most is toughness. I mean, I think you've got to first be mentally tough, and then you just got to be physically tough. I mean, there are days you're going to have to go out there and play hurt. Very rarely in the NFL are you 100%, and I think Brandon Flowers demonstrated that. If he can run out of the tunnel, he's going to give you everything he's got.
No. Tackling isn't something that's fun for a corner. Brandon doesn't care. Brandon doesn't care if he's 5'9". Brandon doesn't care if he's undersized compared to that running back coming at him. He's going to make that tackle, and you're not going to stop him.
He's one of the toughest players in the field, and he's so good in run support. He's not one of those corners that's going to shy away from contact. He can come up and stop the run, and I think that he adds a level of toughness to the secondary.
Let go, man!
He is always willing and ready to do whatever it takes to win. And if that means embracing a role that's not in the spotlight, he'll embrace a role that's not in the spotlight. His humility as a player is one of his greatest assets, that it's not going to diminish his workload or his work ethic if he's not called upon to always be the playmaker.
You got a veteran who was asked to play a different position, and you know, you didn't hear any complaining. Even while battling injuries, he stepped inside and handled the slot role.
Brandon Flowers accepting that role as that slot corner, I thought that really helped, and that allowed the Chiefs to do some different things in that secondary.
I think this should be a big year for Brandon Flowers. The expectations of the NFL are very high, especially for corners. Brandon Flowers has been working and working and working and working. If it culminates in an excellent year for him in 2014, I think there's no question that people are going to want him to be a mainstay here in Kansas City.
In his first season as the Chiefs' offensive coordinator, Doug Peterson helped rejuvenate the offense as they finished sixth in the league in scoring. The Chiefs' offense was a balanced attack that kept opposing defenses on their heels all season long. I sat down with Coach Peterson in this week's one-on-one. Going into your second year as an offensive coordinator, how much different is this offseason than the last?
You know, it's something that I've thought about here since we began the offseason, you know, after the last game there. And I think for us as a coaching staff and for me as a coordinator, the fact that we've really installed our entire offense last year, we don't have to go in and teach concepts anymore. Now we can really detail our work and we can teach fundamentals and techniques and kind of the ins and outs of how to run routes and how to block and how to take a drop for a quarterback. And so going forward, that's the encouraging part. The fact that guys know the plays, you know, we don't have to reinstall anything. And now we can really, really teach and dive into the offense.
How did you see Alex Smith develop and improve from week one to the playoff game?
There was a big improvement. First part of the year, he was still learning our system, and he was still learning progressions and reads and really kind of understanding his team. We got to that bye week, and we said, no, we just got to keep pushing forward and keep doing what we're doing, and things are going to begin to open up. And sure enough, second half of the season, I mean, he really started seeing things well. He started to understand the guys around him, the talent level of guys around him. You know, you saw the big games on the second half of the season, particularly the playoff game that he had. And it's just, it's really a good stepping stone now going into this offseason in 2014.
Now let's talk a little bit about Jamal. You've been a player and a coach in this league for a number of years. How does Jamal compare to other running backs that you've seen over the years?
I've had the pleasure of working with some good ones. I go back to my days in Green Bay with Edgar Bennett and Amon Green and Eric Bieniemy. I had a chance to play with him and some of these great running backs. And his style is so unique now that you can really use Jamal in a way that he can be a receiver for you, he can be a running back. You can use him in multiple areas of your game plan. And he's such a tremendous talent that it's hard to keep him off the football field. And we're excited to go forward now with him for this season.
Now, you and Coach Reed go way back to when you were playing in Green Bay and he was an assistant. How has that relationship developed over the years?
As the player coach back then, a lot of respect for him. He's a great teacher of the game. And then fast forward to now as a coordinator and working with him, you know, the past 5 years, it's the same way. I still feel like I'm the pupil, obviously, and he's the teacher. I have such a great respect, high respect for him and what he's done in the National Football League and his success as a head football coach. And just looking at that and our relationship, we spend so much time together now as coordinator, head coach, that sometimes you forget that he did once coach me. And it is a great relationship and one that I have a lot of respect for.
It seems like there's a unique cohesion among the coaches here. What is it that allows you guys to work so effectively together?
There's no selfishness, bottom line. I mean, we all get together, offense, defense, special teams. We work well together, and obviously that starts with Coach Reed and his leadership ability and his style, and it just feeds down to the rest of us. So it is a great staff, and we get along, and that's also part of winning.
Now, heading into the 2014 season, how much momentum does this offense have?
That's quite a bit. You know, we felt like we were peaking at the right time offensively at the end of the season. It was just unfortunate to lose that final game, but you know, as we go forward, once again, the guys coming in here, they understand the system. We got the core group of guys coming back. We're really excited with this upcoming season.
Coming up, we head to the film room as our experts break down the Chiefs' dominant pass rusher, Justin Houston.
Vic, and the two-minute drill is engulfed and eaten alive by Justin Houston.
Oh, man.
And later, we catch up with Chiefs Hall of Famer Gary Barbaro.
He throws the right side and spat it away. Incomplete. Barbaro.
There are over 3 billion phone calls made in the United States every day. It's easy to take one for granted. But some calls should not be ignored or sent to voicemail. because the fate of a kingdom is on the line.
He turned it in.
We're going to take him.
The kingdom is calling. Who's going to answer?
Welcome back to Red and Gold. In 2013, the Chiefs' defense wreaked havoc on opposing offenses all season long. And outside linebacker Justin Houston was a big reason why. Despite seeing action in only 11 games, Houston still managed to set a career high in sacks, finishing fifth in the AFC with 11. On this week's Chiefs Live Overdrive, voice of the Chiefs Mitch Holthus and former Chiefs long snapper Kendall Gammon join us to discuss the dynamic skill set of Justin Houston.
And on Charles, run to the near side, he's got the open field. It's going to be hit and obliterated. Sacked by Tom Mahoney.
Wants to throw for Bowie
at the 30, at the 20. Touchdown, Kansas City.
Justin Houston is one of the most dominating players in the entire National Football League. In just over a half year, Kendall, he had 11 sacks. He led the team for the entire year with 14 quarterback pressures. But we also saw what he meant when he wasn't on the field. Because when he and Tom Bahali went down in Week 12 against the San Diego Chargers, the Chiefs gave up their biggest total of the year. So I have to ask you, what does number 50, Justin Houston, mean to the future of this team?
Well, Mitch, certainly as a pass rusher, you measure in sacks. But what Justin Houston is doing is so much more. He's becoming a complete outside linebacker.
This is from the Chiefs' Week 9 game in Buffalo, midway through the second quarter. The Chiefs align in their traditional 3-4 base defense with four linebackers and three defensive linemen. Tom Bahali and Justin Houston are both showing rush, but have responsibilities in the run game as well. In the event of a run play, both outside linebackers are responsible for setting the edge. This tactic forces outside running plays in to the heart of the defense. It's a strategy that defensive coaches facing the Chiefs often teach their defensive players as well, as it's their best chance at keeping Jamaal Charles under wraps. The Chiefs' offense saw it in Week 5 against the Titans. The play call is to run to the weak side off tackle. The Titans' outside linebacker, Akeem Ayers, is responsible for setting the edge and keeping any Charles run inside. But Brandon Albert is too quick, sealing off Ayers from the play at the start. Jamaal is able to capitalize off that mistake and run for a 20-yard gain. Now, fast forward to Week 9. With elite speed back C.J. Spiller in the backfield, Houston's responsibility is the same. Keep the running back from getting to the sideline. As the play develops, Spiller tries to escape to the outside, but Houston holds the edge. All of a sudden, the Bills' counterplay is in shambles, and Spiller goes down for a one-yard loss.
Jeff Toole on first and 10 hands it off to C.J. Spiller trying to go to the right side, and Spiller is hit for a loss.
Mitch, that's a play that not every pass rusher in the NFL can make and really shows what Justin Houston brings to the table.
Ken, that's a great point. He has become a force against the run and, of course, an outstanding pass rusher. Last year, in just over a half year, he had more sacks than he had in the entire 2012 season. So I have to ask you, what steps has he taken to become a premier pass rusher?
One word, maturity. He continues to add to his game.
Here in Week 1, he is matched up against the Jaguars' top draft pick, Luke Jokel. He easily beats the rookie with a speed rush, running right around him to the quarterback, recording one of his three sacks of that day.
Gabbert has no chance. Justin Houston gets his third sack of the game.
We'll pick it up again in Week 3, matched up against another first-round draft pick, rookie Lane Johnson. Here, Houston is going to set up a speed rush, but then counter with an inside move to the quarterback. The rookie is not ready, and Michael Vick has nowhere to go. Another sack for Houston. Two plays later, he shows one final move. Here, he's going to come off the ball low and get leverage on the tackle, putting him on his heels and pushing him into the backfield before bringing Vick down for a sack with his own man.
Vick in the two-minute drill is engulfed and eaten alive by Justin Houston. Oh, he had nowhere to go.
That's about as impressive a set of pass rushes as you'll see. And what it shows is how he's working on his technique and how he's getting better. The future is very, very bright for number 50, Justin Houston.
Stay tuned. When Red and Gold returns, we catch up with Chiefs Hall of Famer Gary Barbro.
He was physically tough. He was mentally tough.
If you were coming down his side or across the middle, look for Gary Barbro because he was going to stick you.
Welcome back to Red and Gold. Selected by the Chiefs in the third round of the 1976 NFL Draft, Gary Barbaro spent his entire seven-year career with the Chiefs. Barbaro started every one of the 101 career games he played in and holds a team record for most consecutive starts to begin a career. In 1980, he recorded 10 interceptions, which still remains as the club record for the most picks in a single season. And just this past year, Barbaro became the newest member of the Chiefs Hall of Fame. In this week's Access Arrowhead, we catch up with Chiefs defensive back Gary Barbaro.
A friend of mine was coaching at East Jefferson High School, and he called me up and says, we've got a kid here that hasn't played any football before. And he said he's played in a band, and he talked his mom into coming out his senior year, and he says he's pretty reckless with his body. He's got fairly good speed. You want to come take a look at him? I said, yeah, I'll look at him. So we ended up bringing him down to Nicholls State.
I remember tugging on my sister and saying, he's going to make it big. He can make it into the, you know, into the NFL. And she said, you really think so? I said, oh, absolutely. Guy that was that big, could run that fast, there was a place for him in the NFL.
When Gary went into the NFL, I was never surprised at any of his achievements or success. When the pro scouts would come through his senior year, they just couldn't believe how good he was.
Gary was one of the first Chiefs players that I really got to know well. He was with the team in the early 80s when I was a ball boy at training camp.
It was early on that I actually became one of the senior players on defense just because of the fact that there was a new regime that came in, and a lot of the former Super Bowl players were no longer on the team. In short order, I became one of the veterans, the older veterans on the defense, and even though I was in my, you know, mid-20s.
Gary Barbaro was one of the leaders, not only with his performance on the field, but he was a guy that everyone in the locker room looked toward for setting the examples off the field as well.
He kept that defense together. But more than that, I mean, we had a really good relationship with one another. Guys spent time around each other. We would go out to dinner together. We just kind of hang out together. But within that secondary and then within the team, Gary, I think, was considered one of the leaders of our team. Every guy on the team had a great deal of respect for him.
He had 10 interceptions in one season. He is the fourth all-time leader in interceptions in the club's history, which just shows you what a great player he was.
He was a fierce competitor.
They just don't have many like that anymore. Guys like Gary now are playing linebacker.
He had a high football IQ and a lot of natural instincts.
Smart and tough. Just two words.
He was physically tough. He was mentally tough.
If you were coming on his side or across the middle, look for Gary Barbaro because he was going to stick you.
He was where he had to be all the time. And when he got there, the opponents knew he was there.
Tommy Kramer drops straight back, looking the end zone. He throws the right side. It's batted away, incomplete. Barbaro and Whitney Paul were there to knock it away.
It has been said that one of the more prolific defensive backfields in the history of the organization was when Daron Cherry and Albert Lewis and Lloyd Burris and Kevin Ross were here. And I don't dispute that at all because I played with those guys. But those guys, I would think, would say to a man that they were the players they were because they were mentored by Gary Barbaro and Gary Green. And then Gary Green and Gary Barbaro would say they were mentored by Emmett Thomas.
And these were all pro players. And they kind of took us under their wing. They taught us what it meant to be a defensive back for this organization. There was a legacy here that you knew from day one that if you made this team, you were part of that.
It seemed as though Gary took Daron under his wing. And when Gary left, it just seemed to get turned over to Daron. And then he picked it up from there and went on from there. So that level of leadership and that position continued on.
We had a legacy of good defensive backs, some great defensive backs, Johnny Robinson, Emmett Thomas. I was fortunate to play with Emmett at the end of his career, and he gave us a lot of insight and, you know, told us what to expect and, you know, how to approach the game. We just, for some reason, it seemed like we always had some good secondaries. Gary Green, outstanding cornerback, I don't think got the recognition that he deserved, was an outstanding cornerback during my tenure there. So a lot of the success that I had was directly attributed to those guys that I was playing around.
Thanks for joining us on this edition of Red and Gold. If you missed any of the show, be sure to go to kcchiefs.com to get caught up. And Chiefs fans, if you haven't heard, you can join the inaugural Chiefs Fantasy Camp beginning May 15th. Break down film, enjoy your personal locker, and huddle up with Chiefs greats on the field at Arrowhead. Play alongside former Chiefs like Priest Holmes, Dante Hall, Trent Green, Eddie Kennison, Christian Okoye, and more. Visit kcchiefs.com to learn more. Until next time, go Chiefs!
Toss power trap.